Welcome, everybody, to a special edition of the Accidental Anchor Podcast. My name is James Zipidelli. I have a lot of wonderful professional days, and this is right near the top. I am pleased to welcome to our community this afternoon, Rob Schwartz. Rob Schwartz is a producer, writer, and entrepreneur. His work has appeared in Time, Newsweek, Variety, The Hollywood Reporter, and Melanie Maker, among many others. He was a script editor at NHK World TV in Japan for 14 years and has been an Asian correspondent for Billboard magazine since 2008. In 2005, he founded the electro-rock crossover record label Dynastic Records in Japan. He also produces feature films including Putty Hill and Bernard and Huey, actively invests in tech-based startups, and is currently a partner in the virtual concert creation platform Moshpit. Rob is one of the producers of Wantopia, a benefit music festival for mental health slated for May of 2025. Rob is, of course, the editor and wrote essays for The Wisdom of Maury, written by his father, Maury Schwartz. So, Rob, welcome.
Thank you so much. That's a very sweet introduction. And you got it perfectly right. Lots of people mistake that I wrote The Wisdom of Maury, but that's not the case at all. It's written entirely by my father, and I added some essays. Of course, I edited it considerably, but that we can discuss that.
What was Maury like as a father? What was your relationship like?
Right. Well, you know, it sounds a little corny when you just say it straight out, but I'll say it to you. I mean, he really was a wonderful dad, as you might imagine from reading Tuesdays with Maury. He was very warm. He was very caring. He was very present. You know, he had a wonderful sense of humor. I would say he practically never got angry. I mean, I can really, in my memory, count the number of times getting angry, maybe on, you know, two fingers. Of course, you know, every family has a special dynamic. So he was able to play that role because my mother played the role of the disciplinarian, you know. So he was able to play the role of the nice guy. As we're all aware, there's always, like, you know, good cop, bad cop when raising children. But he was an incredible father. I mean, I could add a few, you know, little caveats here and there that don't bother me, but maybe when I say he's an incredible father, it wouldn't be the image that some people have. For example, he wasn't very athletic. You know, maybe I remember one or two times playing, you know, catch with him, but he didn't really, you know, we didn't really go out and play sports together because that wasn't his thing. But he really was an incredible father. We had an extremely close relationship, and I feel like, you know, I took a lot of my personality from him. We were quite similar, and I can talk about how that is if people are interested. But he really was a fantastic father, as you would imagine from reading Tuesdays with Maury. Very loving, very warm, very sensitive to what was going on with me. And, you know, of course, every father has ideals for their children, which may or may not come to pass. But he wasn't too oppressive about them. I mean, a great example would be, of course, after I'm grown, some of your listeners may know, probably most may not know, that I moved to Japan right after I graduated from university. And he wasn't super thrilled with that decision, not because he wasn't interested in foreign cultures. He is, he was very much so. And I think I inherited some of that from him, but because it was so far away, it was, you know, difficult for us to spend much time together, though I did come back to the U.S. regularly. But, you know, he wasn't thrilled to have me, whatever it is, 10,000 miles away. But he didn't object because that's the kind of father he was. But, you know, he also wasn't thrilled about the decision. So, I mean, I can talk about specific things if you want, but in general, I think that's the answer to your question.
What's interesting about both Tuesdays with Maury and your book, The Wisdom of Maury, is that your dad talks a lot in The Wisdom of Maury in terms of we. You know, a lot of books talk about, I saw something.
Right.
I'll give you one example. On page 91, there's a vignette that you have called The New York Subway. So if you'll just permit me, I'll read a couple of lines.
Sure.
It says, we can carefully notice what others are doing in relation to us and vice versa. Paying attention to objects and people in the situation, including ourselves. We can also pay attention to the interaction between us and them. If too much is going on, we can focus on what appears to be important. We can attend intuitively to what we've noticed and consciously take in as much as possible. Looking out also means seeing how, when, and where it affects us. And so the reason that this stuck out to me is that he talks in terms of we. It's a very almost communal, in reading it, you really feel like you're a part of a community. Just like you felt like you were a part of a community with Tuesdays with Maury. Was that intentional as a part of your book, or was that how he generally thought his place in the world was?
Yes. I mean, I can answer the question directly just saying yes, but it does need a little more explanation than that. So remember, first of all, that this is my father's writing, right? So I didn't write that we, he wrote it. So to get a definitive answer, you'd have to ask him. But my understanding of it, and you know, once again, I'm going to stress this, because people have made mistakes. People who reviewed this book said, I put this book together from my father's notes or something like that. That's completely incorrect. This book was written from the first word to the last word as a complete manuscript by my father. He attempted to publish it before he got ill, and he failed to do so. And then I got the manuscript, and there's a very long story we can discuss if you like how I, the process of publishing it. But these are all his words. So this is my father's words, not mine. But yes, I think that you're absolutely correct. He is trying to establish a sense of community, a sense of connection, a sense of, you know, unison with the reader, that it's not about him as a person. It's about us and our experience and the human experience. And there's no doubt that this was the focus of his entire life, both his academic career and his personal life, that we have this human experience. What does it mean to be human? And how can we, you know, treat each other as human beings within this community? I think that comes through very clearly in Tuesdays with Maury. It comes through very clearly in this book. And I think it's a very intentional use of the word we. So yeah, that's wonderful that you picked up on that.
The picture that you sent me as a part of the press materials, I'm struck by the fact of you're smiling in the picture, and he's hugging you from behind. About how old were you, and do you remember that particular
memory? Sure. I'll tell you a little bit of background of that photo. That photo is taken at summer camp in Vermont. I would be about 10 or 11 years old in that photo, and those were particularly warm times because I think on some summers we went away for 2 months, the kids, my brother and I went away for 2 months. Some summers we went up to Vermont for 1 month, but I think that they would come up and visit us at least once during that time. And I think that that's what this was, because really my father did not like to be apart from the kids for too long. And so you can sort of feel that warmth and, you know, how special the moment is because he's coming to visit us while we're away at summer camp. And just to expand the answer a little bit, I mean, in addition to what I said earlier about him being a wonderful father, he was extremely affectionate, as you can imagine, from somebody who, you know, has this orientation. And, you know, very loving and very affectionate with the children, which, of course, you know, I loved as a kid.
Is there one particular life lesson, Rob, that I'm sure there are so many, but one particular life lesson that has resonated with you? When I think of Tuesdays with Maury and also your book, the life lessons that have resonated with me, one of them is love each other or perish, which is from the Alden quote. And the other one is, if you're in bed, you're dead, which I thought was particularly funny and on the nose. Is there something that resonates with you?
Right. Well, first of all, both of those come from Tuesdays with Maury. I should correct you a little bit. the Love Each Other Parish is W.H. Auden. A-U-D-E-N is the name of the poet. He's an early 20th century poet. I mean, of course, that's a wonderful sort of overall for all of society, you know, is a lesson for all of society. We have to love each other or we're not going to survive as a society. That's what he's saying there. And of course, I agree with that, you know, wholeheartedly. For me, and especially because The Wisdom of Maury, I worked on it so hard, I worked on it for a long time, I would choose things from that book where I would, you know, if people ask me about life lessons or things that I learned from my father, and sometimes, you know, it's a little hard for me to distinguish things that I learned from him or picked up from him throughout our whole life together and things that I necessarily picked up from the book while I was editing it and, you know, rereading it. But in general, I think the life lessons that I would say I picked up from all three, from having him as a father, from Tuesdays with Maury, and from The Wisdom of Maury, is that the most important thing in your life is the people in your life, is the relationships you have with your family, obviously your partner, if you have one, your family, your friends, everybody that you deal with. This is what makes up, you know, the substance and the joy of life. I mean, of course, my father would say, like, for example, your profession, of course, it's important and you want to put yourself into your work and you get some meaning for that. But, you know, the real joy of life, the real meaning of life comes with your relationships with other people. And there's a, I don't know if it's in Tuesdays with Maury or if it's just a thing that my father said when he was being interviewed, you know, because he was interviewed around the time that he was ill. I don't know if you know the whole story of how Mitch came back to meet him, but he was on TV.
It's one of my favorite books. I've had three editions of the book. First, when it came out in 97, then I bought another copy for my parents in 2001, and then I bought a third edition in 2019. So I'm well aware of Tuesdays.
So you bought the 25th anniversary edition in, 2019 would have been before it. All right, I'm going to send you, there's a 25th anniversary edition in which Mitch includes a little bit of writing and he includes rejection letters.
Great.
So I think you would enjoy that. I'll send you a copy of it. It came out, the book 2022. It's the book came out in 97. So 25th anniversary is 2022. So anyways, to get back to the story I was telling. So my father was on Nightline. He was on, you know, many different programs. He was interviewed a lot. And he said, you know, because at this time he was really ill. He was close to death. He was, you know, approaching death. So he was talking about that, which I should emphasize that is not the orientation of The Wisdom of Maury. The Wisdom of Maury is about how you age and live vibrantly and creatively while you're aging. He talks almost nothing about death in The Wisdom of Maury, which it's ironic that this is the second book published and the first book, there it is, the first book published, Tuesdays with Maury, is quite a bit about death because he was dying. He was approaching death. So he said that, you know, when you're really near death, let's say when you're on your deathbed, the size of your bank account is going to make absolutely no difference, like zero difference if your bank account is empty or if it's got $100 million in it. It's going to make zero difference. What you're going to remember and what's going to be meaningful for you, what's going to be powerful for you is the relationships that you've had with people in your life and the love that you've shared with those people. And I think that that is a really powerful lesson for, you know, because we're so driven in this society by success and money and, you know, those things are great. But if you're, you know, missing out on having relationships and if you're, you know, sacrificing those for other things, which are like money, then I think, yeah, you may be making a mistake. And that's what my father is alluding to. It's like what you're really going to remember, what really gives your life joy and substance is the relationships to other people.
Well, that was something that has always drawn me to both Tuesdays with Maury and your book, The Wisdom of Maury. And it strikes me that Maury seemed to place a great deal of effort into maintaining relationships with people, And it strikes me as I reflect on both books that too many of us, and I'm including myself here, we don't initially get that. It's not until much later, and this is how I resonate with what Mitch was talking about. It's not until much later when something bad happens, whether it's to yourself or to a family member, it could be a fatal illness, a lost job, but something requires a reset for what is important in life. So why do you think your dad was able to understand and maintain his relationships, whereas so many of us really don't do that until much later? Why do we wait so long, do you think?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, you're asking me fundamentally, you know, what shaped his personality to be so focused on people and you know, the nature of our relationships and our human experience. In some ways, it's a tough question to answer. In other ways, I can point you to one specific thing, which is both mentioned in Tuesdays with Maury and in The Wisdom of Maury. My father actually gives a long explanation of it about his later life, which, you know, he's talking about something that happened to him when he was about 55. And that has to do with the fact that he lost his mother at such a young age. My father's biological mother, of course, she was, you know, very loving and very sweet and also very much, how should we say, like educated and intellectual woman, which was not the case with his father. His father was like a, you know, day worker who could not even read English. But his mother was this very educated woman from Austria. And she got tuberculosis and got ill and passed away when he was 8 years old. And as you can imagine, for an eight-year-old kid, this was completely devastating to him. And we can talk more about that specific incident. But to answer your question, he said many times, and it's also both in Tuesdays with Maury and The Wisdom of Maury, that he felt like this sensitized him to human suffering, to human pain, to the loss of a very, very important, you know, crucial relationship. So really focused him on his relationships with people and also sensitized him to human suffering. And that's why he developed in the way that he did, with this focus on relationships and, you know, our human experience and being sensitive to people and understanding suffering.
What do you think it seems, and this is just a general observation on my part, I think to say that back then in the 90s that things were maybe simpler, I think is kind of an oversimplification. It is true that we didn't have things like cell phones, for example. The iPhone didn't exist until maybe 2004, but it does seem to me generally, Rob, that things are a lot more complicated. And part of experiencing and being present for people is to turn off the cell phone, to eschew the notifications. You know, maybe I'm oversimplifying things or trying to be funny, but can you imagine Mitch trying to record something that your dad is trying to tell him and, you know, him, Mitch saying, excuse me, Maury, can we stop the recording? I have to answer this notification from Facebook. How can we get back to being present for people when we are constantly bombarded by all of these demands for our time, do you think?
Sure. I actually get this question a lot. And also, you'll forgive me. It wasn't quite stated in the introduction, but essentially I've been a journalist for a long time, so I'm very detail-oriented.
Right, right.
You'll forgive me. The iPhone was released in April of 2007. Sorry.
Sorry.
So exact. Mitch brought one to us. Of course, my father had passed away long before. I have a relationship with Mitch. The first iPhone that I ever saw was from Mitch Album. Just
as a coincidence. That's great.
As a coincidence. And also, I take it you've never seen it, and I'm actually not super enthusiastically going to recommend it, but I will tell you that it's very related to your question. So there's also a movie, Tuesdays right. with Corey. And in that movie, Mitch, the character who is supposed to be Mitch, and the movie is fairly fictionalized, by the way, but anyways, the character that's supposed to be Mitch is very much attached to his cell phone. He's a high profile sports writer for the Detroit Free Press. And that part is obviously factual. And, you know, like in the scene that he's going up to meet my father for the first time in 17 years, he's like on the phone and my father comes out to meet him and he tries to hide because he's on the phone. So that entire issue is addressed in the movie, despite the fact that there was no iPhone in 1995, which is the year right. that went back to see my father after 17 years of no contact. And even though we didn't have smartphones, we did have this sort of constant lifestyle of, you know, being available. Our cell phones already existed. So yes, I mean, I do get this question a lot, and I think there is two sides to it. It's not completely one-sided. I mean, I think the smartphone is an incredible device, and my father would have thought it's an incredible device, and you can be talking to or texting, communicating with somebody on the other side of the world with multiple people that are tens and tens of thousands of miles or however far they are away from you at the other end of the earth in Australia. You can instantly be communicating with them. He would have thought that is unbelievable. But on the other hand, it does take our attention away from the present and the person who is standing right in front of us. And he would absolutely agree with your inference there in the question that this is a bad thing and you need to focus on the people right in front of you when they're with you. So whether that means shutting off notifications or turning off your phone entirely, turning off the ringer, and you know, you of course can come back to your phone periodically, but people who are always focused on their phone every second, they've got to deal with something on their phone. Yes, he would think that that is a bad thing for sure. And the idea of being focused on the people who are physically around you is clearly, clearly important to him, especially if they're people who are important in your life.
Right. And one of the things that I was really struck was the generosity of both your family, the time that he spent when he was ill, but also the time that you spent, you opened your home to not just Mitch, but to all of these other people. And obviously it was wonderful that Mitch wrote Tuesdays with Maury as a completely selfless act to try to help Maury pay his medical bills, because as he said, he didn't want to die twice, once from the illness of ALS and once from you going into bankruptcy or medical debt. Can you just, was that a intentional conscious decision on his part, and how did you really feel about that?
That's a great question. I feel like there's a number of things I need to clarify to answer it, but it's a great question. At the end of the question, you phrased it perfectly. Is that a conscious decision on his part? Because that's exactly what it was. This was my father's decision. This is what I want to do. I want to meet as many people and talk to as many people while I'm having this experience as possible. And as we know, that, you know, is imperfectly in line with what a previous discussion we've had about how people were the most important thing to him. So the point of clarification should be, first of all, in 1994 and 1995, when my father got ill, I was not living in the family house in Newton, Massachusetts. I was living in Japan. Now, I came back to Boston regularly while he was ill and stayed for long periods of time. At that time, I was a freelance journalist, so I could write my journalistic pieces in Boston and fax them off to Japan. This is a time when we didn't even have email. We sent our stuff by fax. In any case, so I did come back for a long period of time, but I wasn't living at home, nor was my brother living at home, though he was living in the Boston area. So it was really my mother who opened up our house, who had all these people over constantly, and, you know, I really can't say enough about how selfless and how incredible she was during this time period. And Mitch mentions it in Tuesdays with Maury, but my mother was a very, very private person. And she did not actually want Mitch to write about her in Tuesdays with Maury. That's why you'll notice there's practically nothing about her. I mean, there's not much about the family in Tuesdays with Maury, but if there is anything, it's more about me. I'm the one, you know, person that Mitch mentions multiple times in the book, other than my father, really.
Well, I know that in Tuesdays, there's a vignette where Mitch comes at one of his visits and he says something like, "I'm surprised to see Charlotte there. She continues to work at MIT as Maury wished." And I believe, if my memory serves me correctly, that it's the same topic where Mitch discovers that all the food that he's bringing Maury cannot eat.
Right, right.
And because he doesn't feel that, he doesn't have the heart to tell him, I can't swallow anymore.
Right, right. You know? That's all accurate. That's all accurate, yeah. And just sorry, to get back to your original question. So it was really my mother who, you know, with this incredible act of generosity, opened our home, because this is what my father wanted to do. And I think we can easily see a direct line between that decision and what's happened since. Like, if he hadn't opened the house up and brought in all these people and started having discussion groups about illness and about death and about the value of life and what's important in life, then we wouldn't have had the Boston Globe come and do a massive two-page spread on him. And if we didn't have the Boston Globe come, then the senior producer at Nightline, who was from Boston, got the Boston Globe, named Richard Harris, a wonderful man who is instrumental in this story, brought my father to Ted Koppel. You know, he had 3 appearances on Ted Koppel because it was so popular, though it's the first one that Mitch saw. It was a set of dominoes that fell because my father was talking to people, was being so verbal, was being so communicative, and expressing things that people found to be valuable. Right. So that's why we have this phenomenon, particularly because my father decided to discuss this with so many people. And my mother was so selfless and generous that she opened up the house. And I mean, the way you've alluded to it, it's exactly correct. We had practically a constant stream of people coming through to meet my father or discussion groups or whatever. You know, so that is really a very accurate sort of appraisal of the situation.
Well, I want to stop for just a second and ask you, Zoom is telling me that I have 10 minutes left. What is your time check? Do you want to keep going or?
This is going to be not a shock to you at all. I love talking about my father. I love talking about the Tuesdays with Maury phenomenon. I love talking about the book that I edited by my father, The Wisdom of Maury. And if you want to sign up for another Zoom session, we can sew them all together, all 3 or 4 of them. I've got no time restraints, at least for the next hour and a half.
Okay, I would be happy to. Let's continue. And I want to just start another Zoom session when this is done, so that we can continue. Let me circle back to something from The Wisdom of Maury, and we can continue once Zoom kicks me out and I have to start again.
Fine.
With The Wisdom of Maury, I wanted to know, how difficult was it? I know you worked with your mom to craft your father's voice. Was it difficult to craft his voice or to find his voice? After so many years, and how did you decide to do that with your mom?
Right, right. That's an interesting question, a little bit of a tough one. So first of all, I should start with, and I think that you've read it because of the way you phrased the question. My mother was instrumental in my starting to edit the book and showing me the way to edit the book. And as you know, I write 2 essays in The Wisdom of Maury. The second one is pretty much about my mom and how she edited my father's work and how she supported my father and her own work as well. So my mother was instrumental in that. I wouldn't necessarily say it was hard to find my father's voice. It was challenging to edit the book because my father was a university professor and he liked to analyze concepts and, you know, look at the minutiae of things. And to a certain point, that's fine. And after that certain point, it's not fine, right? After a certain point, it gets to be like, okay, this is too much. This is going to be boring people. Or so I had to know when to cut it off. It's like, okay, you can make a list of important things. The list can be 7 or 8 items. The list can't be 28 items, right? People just not going to read a list of 28 items. So you need to know when to cut it off. So that's the job of the editor. And that's what I spent my time doing, is taking things out. I added practically nothing. I mean, maybe literally like one word here and there in a 400 page book or a 350 page book. I added maybe one word here and there, but all of the words of my father, I had to subtract stuff. So that was the challenge. But for me, and this was why it was such a joy to like read it and, you know, do this project, his voice rings very clearly. You know, my dad wrote it, it's written in his voice. And if I had, you know, edited really heavily handed, maybe that would have destroyed his voice. But obviously, I wasn't going to do that. So I think that sums up what you're asking.
One of the things I'd like to know is there something that I know Tuesdays with Maury has been out for, I think, 28 years at this point?
26? 27?
27. That's right. It was released in 1997.
Right.
Your book has been out since 2023. Right. Is there something about Maury that the rest of us are missing, do you think?
I mean, it's a funny question. It's hard for me to know. I mean, if you studied these two books and really spent a huge amount of time reading them, especially the second one, because, you know, it's so funny. I call these two books bookends because in some ways there's so much resonance of the content and other ways they're so opposite, right? One book was released 27 years ago. One book was released 9 months ago, right? One book, Mitch's book, Tuesdays with Maury, the writing is so succinct, right? The sentences are so short. It's such a thin book. Dad's, you know, a professor. The sentences are much longer. There's so much analysis in it. It's completely opposite style of writing, basically. So the two books are you know, kind of like bookends in that way of a field or a content that my father wants to express to people, ideas and such that my father wants to express. But of course, I mean, there's more to the man than is in those books. A lot of his thought is in this book. And I must say, he really did feel like this book, The Wisdom of Maury, is a summation of his ideas, both professionally and personally, about life. I mean, he said that to me. And there's a lot of stories. I mean, I could tell you the whole story about how I came to edit the book, which starts way back before my father got ill. Maybe we'll leave that one for the next Zoom. I mean, when you reboot the Zoom, because that's a long story. But to answer your question, I mean, obviously there is more to my father than is in these two books. And I have thought about writing my own book, which wouldn't be a biography, but just to try and give people that feeling of who the man was. Right. And so I actually have interviewed lots of my father's colleagues and friends and things like that. I started that years ago, maybe 15 years ago or more, probably about 17 years ago. I started interviewing people because I thought like, oh, maybe I'll write my own book. I mean, I'm a journalist. I'm a writer. It makes sense. Tuesdays with Maury is like the best-selling book of the last 40 years, right? Essentially, no book has sold more copies, except maybe the Bible. Who knows how many it sold in the last 40 years? But you know what I'm saying. It's one of the best-selling books of the last 40 years. So there's an opportunity there. And I haven't done it yet. And it's, you know, it's a difficult thing to do, to write about your father. But I wanted to get stories that illustrated who he was and parts of his personality from people. And I got some of them. It was tough for people to come up with stories that had a specific illustration in them. But I have enough of my own. So I could probably get that book out, and I'm still thinking about it. I could tell you some characteristics of his that maybe don't necessarily straightforwardly come through in Tuesdays with Maury or the Wisdom of Maury. Some of them do. Mitch mentioned some of them. I'll give you a couple. My father just had this sense of wonder about life, despite the fact that he grew up very poor, that he lost his mother at an incredibly young age. He's seen a lot of suffering. He had this sense of wonder and joy about the world that I think that, you know, maybe you get in Tuesdays with Maury because, you know, he's dying, yet he's not, you know, morose. He still has this sense of joy and wonder about the world.
Okay, so Rob, let me stop this and we're going to continue with part two with Rob Schwartz. This is a special edition of The Accidental Anchor, and we'll be right back.